You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast with Scott Allen Roberts, and we're trying to talk about these conversations they had with the creature they perceived to be God. So we assume, of course, E.T. was multilingual, but then I guess the ultimate question here in our final few portions of the show is trying to identify who or what these creatures might have been. Were they E.T., divine beings? We'd assume they'd be divine beings based on our state of civilization way back then.
Well, that's certainly how ancient man perceived them, at least the records we have in religious historical accounts, like the book of Genesis. I find where we left off, I was talking about Cain and all these conversations God had with him.
Right,
he warns Cain. Then when Cain murders his brother, he tosses him the famous question, "Am I my brother's keeper?" He says, "You're going to cast me out. You're going to exile me." He says, "How do I know if I go out there that people who find me won't kill me?" And the big question is, okay, let's see, there's Adam, there's Eve. The Hebrew genealogies were pretty meticulous. There's nobody else mentioned except Cain and Abel. And now there's a chicken scratch through Abel. So you got these three people, according to the text. And then it says Cain leaves and he impregnates his wife and bears a child, names him Enoch. Not the Enoch of the Book of Enoch. This is several generations earlier. And then he builds a city and names the city after Enoch, which, by the way, the etymology of the old words, by the way, Enoch, if you look at it through the filter of the ancient language, the E becomes an I, the N becomes an R sound I. There's no logic to it. I don't know why it works that way, but that's what it did. Basically, the word Enoch is the word Iraq or Uruk. And there's a city, Uruk, in Iraq today that actually, by definition, over the centuries has come to mean the original city. So they think this is the city that Cain built in the Mesopotamian Valley there in Iraq. But all of these, how do we know who was interacting with Cain at that time? We don't. You brought up an interesting point a while ago. Were there two factions that were dealing with humanity? We don't know that for sure. But what we do know, what we have called the war in heaven, Lucifer's fall and things like that, and that just the good versus evil, those all seem like such simplistic ways of describing something. That's a religious way of describing something, but there was history to it as well, as we've already determined. So were they dealing with God? Were they dealing with Lucifer or Satan or angels or demons? Or were they dealing with different factions of extraterrestrial beings, non-human entities? We don't know for sure. What we do know is that they seem to be set up at odds against each other. And the bloodlines from Eden, when God curses the serpent and says there will be this enmity, this conflict constantly between the seed of the serpent and the seed of humans, this sets up why you have all the genealogy. You know all those long, boring chapters of genealogies in the Old Testament where, you know, Methuselah begat Ahab and Ahab begat, and so on. Lots of begats. In the Hebrew tradition, all these genealogies were taken through the firstborn sons of every family. And they might have skipped a generation here or there, but sometimes father was called grandfather, or so on and so forth. But you got all these genealogies set up. When you get to King David, you finally trace his genealogy back to Adam, but they don't take it traditionally through the firstborn, Cain. They take it through Abel, the secondborn. You go, huh, why did they do that? Then you get to Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now you're talking about New Testament theology. Let's presuppose, for the sake of this conversation, the argument that Jesus of Nazareth is indeed, or Yeshua bar Yashaf, the son of Joseph, he is indeed the Messiah. Well, what his followers did in the Gospels, they trace Mary's family back to David because they had to establish that Jesus was of the line of David. That was one of the post-Davidic prophecies of the Christ, is that he would sprout from the royal line of David. And then they traced David again back to Adam through the lesser-born Abel. Now, why did they do this? Why did they break tradition and trace him to the lesser-born? I think there's a reason for that, and it's the whole bloodline issue. In the Hebrew way of thinking, Messiah meant kinsman redeemer. It was a redeemer for mankind that had to come from one of us. He had to be full human blood. There's that whole theology. You hear it at Christmas time in church. He was one of us. You know, we hear all that stuff about that. That's a ancient Hebrew theology based on the kinsman redeemer. Now, why did they trace his line back to Abel instead of Cain? Because Cain was not of the pure human blood. And Noah was traced back to Abel, to Adam, because Noah was the only righteous, quote unquote, the only pure-blooded man, pure in all his generations, not tainted by the blood of Nakash or the blood of this other race. And so there was this distinction, and that's why God, even in the garden, said there will be enmity between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the humans. There is a dual bloodline that existed. And the Messiah, the kinsman redeemer, that whole theology of the kinsman redeemer was built that it had to come from the pure bloodline. And this is why Abel is mentioned. But it's never explained in the passages.
David Icke's been trying to explain it and talk about reptilian bloodlines and stuff.
As a matter of fact, my follow-up book to this book is I'm working on. It's tentatively entitled The Reptilian Enigma. And I subtitled it. It's all going to get changed, I'm sure. But I subtitled it The Pervasive Presence of the Serpent in Human History, Religion, and Alien Mythos. Now, I think David Icke, and I mention him in my book, I don't like David Icke, personally. David Icke, to me, is an anti-Semite. He is somebody that promotes racism, as veiled as it may be. But he is no different, and pardon me for saying this, I see him no different. He's a neo-Nazi, as far as I'm concerned. He's saying the same things they said in the Final Solution under the Third Reich. There is a race that is responsible for all the ills and woes of mankind. And David Icke will put forward the same idea. Now, maybe I'll have a beer someday with David Icke and he'll correct me, but this is what it looks like on the surface. You go to his website and these are the things he teaches. He fills stadiums. I think David Icke is somebody who has taken this theory and maybe started with something that was pretty cool. You know, he had an idea there and it worked, but it is now transformed
into
something. Go ahead.
Scotty, one second here. In reference to David Icke, I think what's the old adage? If you steal from one person, it's plagiarism. If you steal from a bunch of people, they call it research. I'm not sure.
Exactly.
There's not many original ideas there. I'm good friends with his soon-to-be ex-wife. She's actually a very dear friend of mine, and she kind of made me go down and watch his eight-hour presentation a couple years back in Phoenix. And
lucky you.
Wait, I had a front row seat. I had to wear my sunglasses so he couldn't tell I was sleeping. But he spent the whole first 4 hours admonishing everybody for you know, we're responsible for creating our own reality and the quality of our existence is all self-determined.
Basically, the same story.
Which sounds great. But then he spent the next 4 hours after I'd left scaring the bejesus out of everybody with all this reptoid talk. So
I'll tell you what, Chris, I would never stand 8 hours for anything. You know, I don't see how that could happen. I wouldn't stand for 8 hours of me.
You know, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I sat once back when I think it was 4 or 5 was coming out. And the number 5 was coming out, and they had this thing called Sit Long and Prosper, and you could go to your local theater that sponsored it and watch the first 4 Star Trek movies. That was 8 hours. I love Star Trek. By the time I was through the 3rd movie, I'm like scratching my ass and going, man, I'm hungry.
Then you say, I'm going to go watch Star Wars movies after this. That's all. you gave up on Star Trek. No, I couldn't watch any of these movie festivals. Now, exception here, some of these old movie serials back from the 40s, like, for example, Captain Marvel with Tom Tyler. Now, I could watch that, which is like 2.5-3 hours if you watch the entire 15 chapters or so, or 13 chapters.
Right.
I could sit through them. Okay, I've done that with a few of those movie serials. But actually going through a movie festival, after the first couple of movies, I'm gone.
I once hosted at my house a few years ago the complete, let's all get together. I got about 12 people came over at a bar in the house with a big TV, and we watched all 3 of Lord of the Rings extended plays. And we
had
lunch and dinner and all of that. It was fun. We had a good time. But that's a long time to sit on your butt and listen to anything. And by the way, Tolkien, by the way, I think had a handle beneath the subtext of his fictional stories on stuff that was going on.
You know what? I'm going to ask you about that in our next segment. Scott Alan Roberts brings up Tolkien on our show this week, and we've got to explore this with Gene and Chris because you're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. It's non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
What if pain could be reduced, ailments could be alleviated, physical and mental stress could be eased, and blood circulation increased, all by simply lying down? Introducing the original Biomat. The Biomat is an FDA-registered medical device that combines deep-penetrating infrared space-age technology and revitalizing negative ions with the incredible healing power of amethyst crystals. A Biomat can boost your immune system, relieve pain and stiffness, reduce stress and fatigue, and assist in detoxifying your body. Join the thousands of people reporting relief from chronic pain, fibromyalgia, arthritis, sports injuries, insomnia, and much more. Each Biomat comes with a lifetime trade-in and three-year warranty. Learn more at bio-mats.com, spelled bio-mats.com, or call 360-944-8692. That's 360-944-8692. Visit bio-mats.com today and enhance your life with a Biomat.
Folks, Iran and the Mideast nuclear mess is already ballooning our gas prices. Whether you're struggling with food costs, which are being blown up by gas costs now, or know that when the Mideast showdown explodes, whatever food supply you have is all you'll get because of huge panic demand. eFoods Direct Family Packs are the answer. Now, the most affordable, best food is saving you up to 50% compared to other poor quality food companies. The new Alex Jones Quick Fix Family Packs save you so much money, the savings from eating this food will actually help you pay your other bills. No matter what effect the Mideast crisis or the crashing economy have, you'll have food as delicious tonight as 25 years from now. Order now for 50% savings and free shipping on these affordable family packs. Call 800-409-5633 or efoodsdirect.com/Alex. Call 800-409-5633 or efoodsdirect.com/Alex.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
With Gene, with Chris on the Farragast with Scott Allen Roberts, and you raised the name of a famous fantasy fiction writer. He had his hands on something there. He was saying something other than just enjoyable fiction.
I think he had his mind wrapped around something. And let me preface it by saying this. One thing you'll find when you crack open the real small story of the Nephilim, you find out it is a huge story. It is all-encompassing. This is a story that when you go through the theological line through the Hebrew scripture, you will find this is a huge story encompassing all of mankind and all of mankind's events. You bring David Icke into the picture, and you find that he has taken off on that in a totally different trail, sourcing in the same stuff, and it's affecting all of humanity. You look at Tolkien. He wrote a book about orcs and humans and elves, and he was talking about the third age of man and all of these things. If you start really digging apart some of his stuff, you'll find that he was latched into some pretty deep mythology sources back in all of this Nephilim stuff. First time I ever really noticed it was there's two things in particular, the elven folk, and then there was the calling up of the demonic armies, the orcs and so on. There's a legend, I think it even goes into this, the Freemasons. I'm not talking about the Freemasons now, but the Freemasons talk about, who was it, Hiram, who was supposed to be the guy who built, architected the first temple.
Abyss.
Yes. They say that Solomon had a ring, and that this ring was something that gave him power over the demonic forces to come, and he could call the demonic forces, the evil forces, to do his bidding.
Scotty, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who's done quite a bit of research into this whole scenario, would argue with the demonic tag that you're placing on these entities.
Sure.
She argues for the interpretation of these forces being the jinn, which I find very compelling. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, and that is a hot topic right there, too. You know, this is something we're only starting to resurface these stories of the jinn. I believe that Tolkien, when he was writing, knew this stuff, and he incorporated it into all his writings. You look at the elven folk and the way they are described in his writing. The Tuatha De Danann I mentioned earlier, when they were the Celtic people's version of the watchers that came down, the kings from heaven, the bright, shining ones, tall, elegant, bright, shining kings. And they became known as the elven folk who receded into the Hollow Hills. El, the word El, I'm sorry, there's a direct correlation to Elohim, El, the name of God. El that's used as the suffix to all the great archangels, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, all these different Azazel, all these angels bore the name of God at the ends of their names. The elven folk, the same. I think Tolkien, this is one, pardon the pun, one bright, shining example of him extrapolating that information over into his fictional stories. And we all know he was using those books to really put out his poetry and things like that, and all the songs he'd write and the linguistics he would study. But his whole sub-basis to the whole thing was all these theories of these cultures that existed pre-Adamic culture, pre-biblical culture, but they all link into all these different beings. So it's hit our fictions in different ways, because it's out there. It's there and can't be denied.
Well, Scotty, I think that there's a lot of work that you just can't really do. I mean, you can only go so far with this material,
right,
because of its antiquity. I think that this is, it's very entertaining when someone like a Zechariah Sitchin gets involved and starts spinning it off in one direction, and David Icke, if you're entertained by fear-based stuff, spinning it off in another direction.
Right.
But the bottom line is, unless we occasionally will see, you know, these archaeological finds that are gradually pushing back the earliest versions of these stories, but so many people were involved in editing and writing the Bible. I think I read an article once that they've estimated that upwards of 60-some people probably wrote the Bible.
Right.
Unless you have a very strict oral tradition, as you find in many indigenous cultures, all this stuff is subject to interpretation and obviously has been twisted, folded, mutilated, and spindled through time. So you go around and around in circles with this stuff, but there are really tantalizing indications that we interacted at some point with a non-human intelligence that was exalted in the eyes of us lowly humans.
And you can't deny that something happened. It's defining what that something is. Sad to say, it really is, and we've said it before in this conversation. A lot of it is based on what your starting point is as to what you believe about these things, and then breaking free of that starting point if you find something is different than what you believed. My view of God has changed immensely just in the writing of this book, because I saw God in a very different way than I understood him through all the theology I learned.
Yeah, he was scary back in the Old Testament days, boy. The wrathful God. I mean, he got angry movie, it was like, oh boy, duck and cover, here it comes.
He wasn't right. Morgan Freeman. He wasn't what? George Burns.
Yes, yes. I think it's interesting about God that you find, now again, here's Moses, this guy who I think was establishing his leadership over Israel, and his background was to become the Pharaoh God of Egypt, but instead he became the Pharaoh God of Israel. You see all these things he writes about God. You see him changing God's mind. God was really pissed off because the people were worshiping the golden calf, and oh, I'm going to destroy all these people, and I'm going to start it all over in you, Moses. And Moses, oh no, in all humility, no, God, you can't do that. You know why? You'd be breaking your word because you promised this to Abraham and his seed. And it says, and God repented of the evil that he was going to do, because Moses, a man, convinced him that he was doing the wrong thing.
What's wrong with that
picture?
What's
wrong with that picture is you've got the all-knowing, almighty, omnipotent, omniscient God suddenly having a guy change his mind.
Yeah, scratching
and, his beard. You know, Moses was just a guy. When you boil it down, he was a guy, and he had motivations and ambitions like anybody else. I also found it very interesting in the writings of Moses. It's right there in the book of Numbers when the children of Israel were wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, and it says, and Moses set up his tent outside the camp, because he was the leader. Moses is the guy who wrote this, and it says, Moses, and God would come down in the form of a cloud and settle on Moses' tent. And Moses would talk to God, commune with God face to face, as a man talks to his friend. But then 9 verses later, in the same chapter, you got God saying, and no man can see my face and live. Moses wrote this. What was Moses writing?
Yeah, a little schizo.
I'm more than a guy.
I think he was in need of an editor to have plot consistency. You know, we have Moses continuity people in motion pictures, by the way. You switch scenes and the clothing can't change. Sometimes it does. You see these silly errors where suddenly somebody is wearing totally different clothing, or the car that was wrecked in the previous scene is now fixed again. But Moses couldn't have done that, could he?
Now, is that a contradiction in Scripture? Some people go, oh, see, the Bible's full of contradictions. I don't think it's a contradiction at all. I think the subtext there, Moses, who wrote the chapter in the first place, was establishing that I am not just a man. I am the Pharaoh God of Israel. Wasn't that his punishment at the end of his days?
Scotty, if he was the Pharaoh God of Israel, I never could figure out how the Israelites could wander around for 40 years in the Sinai, which is not a very big place. I mean, boy, he may have been godlike or something, but he sure needed a GPS unit or a good navigator.
You know, and why didn't those people say, screw you, I'm going over there, you know, where there's grass. Yeah. This is something, too, I always wondered about. If you or I, ask yourself this question, if I stood there on the shore of the Red Sea and I saw the waters miraculously part and there's dry ground and I cross and I'm looking at whales swimming in the walls next to me and I get to the other side and Pharaoh's army chases me and God miraculously closes it on Pharaoh's army. If I saw that one event in my whole life, would I ever think that God wasn't who he said he was?
We're talking to Scott Alan Roberts. You're with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Have you ever seen a U.S. postage stamp featuring Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, or George Washington?
If you're into stamp collecting, you know it's a fun, affordable hobby. America's leading stamp dealer is the Mystic Stamp Company, and they want you to have their free 140-page color catalog. Go to mysticstampad.com, the website of the Mystic Stamp Company, serving stamp collectors since 1923. Mystic Stamp is well known in the industry for its experience, superior customer service, and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Go to mysticstampad.com to request your free 140-page U.S. stamp color catalog packed with collecting tips, special offers, color photos, and over 4,600 available stamps. Call 800-433-7811 or go to mysticstampad.com. That's 800-433-7811 and ask for your free U.S. stamp catalog or mysticstampad.com. Mystic Stamp Company, America's leading stamp dealer.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
What is the most abundant resource on Earth? Water. It's essential for sustaining life, but it's not always the most available. When disaster strikes, water quickly vanishes from store shelves, like it did during 9/11, Katrina, Japan, and in Joplin. 3 days without water and your body begins to shut down. Don't risk being without an abundant supply of water when the next disaster hits. Get a FlowJack hand well pump. The affordable FlowJack drops right into almost any well and is easy to install without having to remove the existing pump, giving you immediate access to plenty of cool, clean water. You could risk your family's health on a limited supply of stored water, or you could be prepared with the reliable, affordable FlowJack backup hand pump kit, delivered to your door for only $3.99 complete. See how it works at FlowJack.com, spelled FlowJack.com. Be sure to spell FlowJack.com or call 855-4-FLOWJACK. That's 855-435-6525. Proudly made in America. FlowJack hand well pumps. Peace of mind in a box.
This is Jim Mosley, editor of Saucer Smear, and I'm here to say a good word or two about the Paracast, which I believe is the gold standard of paranormal radio. Listen to it if you can.
Scott Alan Roberts joining us. We're trying to look at what was seen in ancient times with Gene and Chris and the Paracast. And this raises always the big question here. So we have all this literature, we have the Bible, we have the Quran, we have all these sacred texts around the world talking of interactions with higher beings. So how do we find a focus on this? How do we ever, or is it even possible, prove this one way or the other? And you have to wonder, all this interaction took place in ancient times. And we still have UFOs and strange things happening now, but the interaction doesn't seem to be quite as blatant. So I guess the question would be, did they just set us loose and leave, or did they just come back and watch us? Why did it all change?
I look at it this way. I look at the life of Abraham in the Old Testament, and we think, wow, what a great patriarch. He had all these interactions with God, and yet you only find that he had two. And he was 100 years old when they started. He saw God, and God told him to go to the land of Canaan. Then he wrestled with, or it was Jacob that wrestled with God. So I look at this and I go, here's a guy that we hold out to be this great patriarch, this great man of God, and he had one 5-minute experience in a dream that governed the rest of his life. I think that's what we have to do with this stuff, is say it seems like it's more subtle nowadays. But all through history, don't we have some of the same things that we see that we can point to that? You look at the stories of Incubus and Succubus. You look at the stories of especially the last generation of alien abductions, impregnations, and things like that that have gone on. Is this any different than what supposedly happened back when the Watchers descended down? Was it just more overt back then? These beings came in and they physically, did they announce themselves, hey, I am a son of God and I've come to impregnate you. How did they do this? We don't know how they carried out their task. It could be still happening today. An interesting thing in the Genesis passage where it talks about God is going to wipe out this race, but it also says right there, and the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterward. And then you see several accounts in the Old Testament where it talks about, oh, we can't do this because those are the children of Anak, the children of the Nephilim. So it was either an ineffectual judgment. God passes this whole big watery judgment on mankind, wipes them all out, and oops, it didn't do what I wanted it to do because they're still here.
Scotty, the book of Jubilees that talks about that 10% of the offspring of the Nephilim, I guess, evidently survived, but yes. Disembodied, if I remember correctly.
Well, here's an interesting passage in Enoch, and this is a portion I hit in my book because of some of the paranormal research I've done over the years. There's this whole thing about demonology. Oh, my God. If I had a nickel for every time somebody approached me and said, I'm a psychic, I'd already have a small Caribbean island that I'd be retired to. And then if I had another nickel for every time somebody said, I'm a demonologist, you know, I'd buy another island. There's this whole armchair demonology thing out there, but the whole demonology craze has hit in the last few years, I think with the advent of the pop culture of all the ghost hunting stuff, not to mention any names, but I think that this has brought on this stuff, and people approach it so cavalierly. Enoch talks about demons. Now, what do we say demons are by definition, at least by Roman Catholic theology or Christian theology? They're the fallen angels. That's what we talk about. Now, it's interesting, in Enoch, after he gives all this information about the Watchers and the Nephilim and so on, he says, now the spirits, the ghosts of the Nephilim who perished in the flood, he said, they are the ones that were born on the earth and their spirits will remain on earth. They corrupted mankind and tormented mankind while they were alive in the flesh, and they will continue throughout time to corrupt with their spirits mankind.
Sounds like the jinn to me.
Sounds like the jinn, sounds like the demons, sounds like whatever you want to call it. I believe demonology roots back to the Nephilim.
Okay, you know, a lot of beliefs here, but again, we have skeptics in our audience who are going to look at this and
absolutely.
Say, oh, okay, we're hearing another rant about ancient astronauts, and this is fine, these are nice stories, and maybe they are true. But
how are we ever going
to prove anything?
You know what I think this does? It's like I say, it just adds another apple to the apple cart. All those skeptics out there who are skeptical of this kind of thing, start looking at the theology and say, there's theology that even talks about the very same thing in different clothing. It's talking about this stuff. And you got to start as a skeptic or a scientist or just an atheist or somebody just doesn't want to believe this stuff or think it's all a bunch of hooey. You got to start looking at it and say, wait a minute, there's so much information out there that bolsters the case. That, and yes, we can't prove it. We can't definitively say it was this chrome-colored spaceship that came down and people got off and started having sex with human women. We can't prove that. But what we can prove is that the stories exist, and they exist in all these different cultures and all these different forms. And that says to me, there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Come on.
There had to be some kind of influence. You couldn't have cultures around the world getting information with various levels of interpretation from apparently the same source. Either that source came from a single set of events that spread around the world, or there were simultaneous events amongst all these ancient cultures, which is also as ridiculous, it seems.
I had somebody ask me a couple of weeks ago, what is the, they were talking to me about coming to an event and speaking about this. And, well, our event is all geared around the soul and spirit and all of this. And how would your book appeal to the soul? And I scratched my chin whiskers for a minute and said, it doesn't. What I'm not trying to appeal to the soul, and I'm not trying to appeal to spirituality. I'm trying to dig into theology and say, there's a case to be made here for something. And that case looks like this. It says this in the theology, but it sure looks a hell of a lot like this over here. My main message of this book is stop just regurgitating things you've been taught, whether it be religion, whether it be David Icke, whether it be your pastor, whether it be whoever. Don't regurgitate that and just accept it because, oh, that's a neat theory. I think that's the way it happened. I got a big problem with people saying, well, I feel it was this. Well, that's great. Feel all you want. But feelings do not equate to facts all the time. You know, like, it's like saying, you know, I had a horse lick my face once. It doesn't mean she was in love with me. So the same
thing. You have to ask the horse. We'll have to basically channel the horse, communicate with that horse and say, were you in love with Scotty?
Let's see. Oh, yeah, yeah. She's loving me. I can hear it right now. I hear it in her voice. Can't you hear it?
Lovey-dovey. Yeah, well, I keep saying, I sound like a broken record on the show, that people have to do their own research. You can't let the culture, your culture is not your friend, number one, and you shouldn't let your culture be the single source for your research and your belief system. I've also found it very interesting that the quantum physicists go to church or go to temple.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
I think there's a certain point that you have to suspend your disbelief, and the only way you can do that is by being up to speed in these areas and really doing your own research.
And I'll tell you, I think some of it might hail back to the fear of letting go of what you were taught. For me, when I say my views of God have changed, I mean that. But I still have the tendrils of my old faith that come up and grab me and say, oh, you're backsliding. Oh, you're a reprobate. You're a heretic. Oh, you're going to hell now. You know, all those things come up.
you'll get over it.
And did you ever think here that maybe what we consider to be visits or interactions with God have nothing to do with it, and there is a God out there, and maybe he, she, or it, they're just laughing at the foolish humans who believe this stuff?
Well, when I said my view of God changed, let me answer it this way. I used to see a God, the God of love, the God that's waiting with open arms for you, the God that does this and does that. I think God gives a hill of beans about human beings.
Now, that almost goes back to something John Keel said a long time ago. And we'll get into what John Keel said about his vision of God, kind of expressed in his theories about ultra-terrestrials, about computerized beings that run the universe, but unfortunately they're not always sane in the way we'd regard as sane.
God is crazy.
Scott Alan Roberts joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Attention, information in this 1 minute message could save your life. Don't wait for the next emergency to happen. Act now to be prepared. Now, more than ever, civilians and communities must communicate with family, friends, and neighbors in the event of civil unrest, natural disasters, or other emergencies. That's why there's CivilDispatch.com. CivilDispatch.com is a universal system that can be used for a wide array of urgent notification alerts. Weather emergencies, civil unrest, emergency responders, amber alerts, school or business closings, any need-to-know situation. CivilDispatch.com is an emergency dispatch communication system, allowing anyone to quickly and easily send and instantaneously track emergency email and text alert notifications. CivilDispatch.com gives you the power of enterprise alerting without the enterprise cost.
Don't find yourself unprepared. Learn more and become a member at civildispatch.com. That's civildispatch.com. Civilian Emergency Dispatch System. Peace through preparedness.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
So you're a maker of something. Woodcrafts, fishing lures, glass designs, jewelry, purses, perfumes, goat's milk soap. Whatever it is, you made it here in America. Now you're eager for people to buy your products right here locally. Instead of buying competing products made on the other side of the world, right? Then you need to check out localmakers.com. Support America. Buy and sell locally at localmakers.com. Doesn't matter if you're a home-based business or a major manufacturer. Localmakers.com offers an easy way to connect with customers within your local community, as well as across the U.S., simply by entering a zip code. And there's no cost to join. So if you're a maker who needs buyers, go to localmakers.com and stock your products on one of our shelves. Localmakers.com, promoting, preserving, and supporting your neighbor's manufacturing businesses.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
Scott Allen Roberts joining us with Gene and Chris in the Paracast. So Chris said, well, what Keel said, that God is crazy. What do you think, Scott?
Well, the old prophets of old and all these holy men over the millennia, it was always said that madmen were had some connection to God. Now, is that because you look at the actions of God and you say, number one, if he's what theology, systematic theology taught us in evangelical Christianity, was that God is all-knowing, knows everything, but he does and acts these certain ways, already knowing what's going to happen. If I got up every day and knew everything that was going to happen, it's just kind of like Groundhog Day, that movie. Did you ever see that?
Yes.
By the time he's at the end of 10,000 lives, they assume, he is somebody who knew everything that was going to happen, and yet he went through the actions every day. If God knows everything is going to happen, I go, why did you even start it? You already knew what was going to happen. Is that the act of a, pardon me, is that the act of a madman? Is that the act of a mad scientist?
Isn't insanity the definition of doing the same thing over and over again and thinking that it's going to turn out differently?
Right. I think, yeah, exactly. And so far be it from me to say I know more than God. I haven't thrown out the baby with the bathwater with any of this. I think God is there, and I think that there are things that exist. But I rather like the words of Richard Feynman, the late Richard Feynman, atheist, yes, scientist. I was listening to bits of a lecture of his, and he was talking about all these stories, these holy stories we have. And he was talking about the universe and the vastness of it. And he said, and he got almost impassioned about it. He said, for me, he says, these stories that says that God, in one of his forms, came here to this planet and manifested himself, he says, seems so colloquial, so local in the vastness of this universe. And he said, I, for one, am comfortable feeling lost in the cosmos. And that did something for me, too, on top of all this, is that God, and the vastness of everything that's out there. Yeah, if you go by Sagan, you remember Sagan's famous, which has been mocked over and over, the billions and billions of stars. You know, there's billions of stars in this, in our galaxy alone, that could host billions of planets like ours. There's billions of galaxies like ours out there in the universe. That also include, you know, you do your math on that, you end up with this astronomical infinite number. And to say that we are the only thing here, hailing once again back to Sagan's book, Contact, that's an awful lot of waste of space if we're the only ones here. And so in tying that into this whole thing to say, if God created this here, what did he create somewhere else? Or if God does not exist at all, and he's a manifestation of our trying to figure it all out or put common sense to things, take this for example. You guys, Chris, you've been a paranormal investigator, correct?
Correct.
So you know, you can experience something, and you see it, and everybody might laugh at you at your story, but you're the one who saw it and you experienced it, and you go, I know this happened. But 10 minutes when you're back outside having a smoke and you're going, is that what I really saw? You know, your mind already starts creating cover stories for what you experienced.
Right. I always try to.
Maybe as mankind, humanity, create these vast cover stories for what we experienced or find ways to explain them. I used an example of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Mary comes to him and says, I'm pregnant, and it's with God's son. And you can see Joseph going, okay. And said he was going to put her away privately, meaning I love her enough, but man, the humiliation, the shame, this is done. I'm not doing this. And then he has a dream. And God comes to him in a dream and says, don't put her away. That's God's son. And he accepts that. But you got to figure, he woke up in the morning and scratched his nuts and grabbed a cup of coffee and looked out at the rising sun and went, was that a dream or was that God? And, you know, he operated by faith after that.
Well, that almost goes with the theory, Scotty, that maybe there's a lot of political correctness in these sacred texts, that they're saying things in a certain way, knowing, well, we've got to frame it this way because we need to have this accepted by the populace. And if we say it another way, or if we even tell them what really happened, well, it's kind of like that song, I Dig Rock and Roll Music. You know, if we really said it, the radio won't play it, so I've got to lay it or say it between the lines. So in this sense, they're doing the same thing, which is they can't say what really happened. They had to frame it in a certain context.
Well, I believe that's part of it as well. I think, well, doesn't the Apostle Paul, when he writes about his experiences, and he talks about having been brought up into the third heaven and shown things that are forbidden for me to repeat, and so he doesn't repeat them. And I was given this thorn in the flesh, he called it, to remind me daily that I'm not supposed to reveal this stuff. Now, was he just setting himself up as it wasn't true? And just like a lot of religious leaders that we see today, you know, God spoke to me last night. You know, is this what Paul was doing? Was he just another guy did he have a real message there? Did something happen to him? We'll never know. And the same thing with all of this stuff. What really happened with the gist of this whole conversation is we know something happened. It's evident in religion. It's evident in science. It's evident in history. It's evident in archaeology. But what we'll never know, at least up to this point, is what it really was. But I tend to think this, and man, this flies in the face of my personal faith or my past personal faith. However you want to look at, some guy talked about me as being an ex-Christian once. But I'm not an ex-Christian. I still believe the basic tenets of Christianity. I can't prove it. But all of this says to me, is it true that mankind created religion to explain the things in life? Why is the sky blue, Daddy? Well, God made it that way. You know, we can get to the science of why the sky is blue, but we can't explain how it came into existence. And so we create cover stories for it. Is there I know one theory out there is that this race that impregnated humans, that tampered with our DNA, that interrupted our development, that there was a cover story implanted in us. Now, is that just psychology, that our minds can't accept these things, or that our minds look for something else, or is there something there that's hidden? What do they say? We use, one-eighth of our brain or one-twelfth of our brain in our lifetimes? Does that mean that there's something more there that's yet to be uncovered or something covered up? I don't know.
I think that number is probably a lot smaller for a lot of people on the planet. I think they're lucky if they use one-hundredth of their brains.
And it's interesting, in the New Testament, I think it's Peter that says, and in those days, he's talking about like that eternal, infinite something out there that's yet to come. And in those days, our minds will be opened. And that's all he says. It's an obscure little verse. And I think, theologically speaking, he's saying the same thing we are here. There's going to be a day where something's going to be opened up, and we're going to understand it, but we don't know.
That would be nice. Tell us, Scott Alan Roberts, where can we find more of the things you do? And then I'd love to talk about your artwork on another occasion and your design work, because that's just fabulous. And I want to talk to you about
that. And being the editor of the Taps magazine and the obvious problems that the ghost hunters are having, not being able to come up with good material every week.
Oh, boy. I worked as the editor-in-chief of Taps Turnmag for about a little over a year, and I parted ways with them for my personal reasons, and I launched my own magazine.
I'll tell you what, tell our listeners where they can find more of this.
IntrepidMag.com. That is my magazine. That's my website. You can go there. You can go to ScottAllenRoberts.com. That is my my portfolio website. It's linked up in my Intrepid Mag site as well. Intrepid Magazine is something I launched to say, I want to get into these other things. When I came on board at Taps, I was asked, what's your vision for the magazine to help pull it out of the hole it's in? And I gave a big bullet list. I said, I think we got to appeal more to more than just the pop culture of television ghost hunting. We've got to expand. There's an audience out there that couldn't give two rats bahookies about ghost hunting, but want to know metaphysics. They want to know science, fringe science, UFOs, things like that. Oh, that's great. Let's do that. And I'd love
to
go there.
Invite you to go to intrepidmag.com. And Chris, he has a site too, OurStrangePlanet.com. And if you go to thepowercast.com, you find everything we're doing. Scott Alan Roberts, thanks for joining us on The Powercast.
Thanks for having me.
The Powercast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Powercast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.